You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
...love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Well, welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
It's not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Hello and welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you found us wherever you consume your podcasting content on Apple Audio Boom or as always on the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. I'm Mitch Lawrence once again, feeling the absence of my co-host Darren Bunch, who's continuing to build his media empire. And by the way, more power to him, Chris. I'm sure you saw this, the news that Rams Hill Golf Club in California, destination we both know that Darren's been working really hard helping get the word out. It was just named as a top 100 public golf course in America by Golf Digest. I mean, that's...
I did see that. Yeah. That is... quite the accomplishment. Congratulations to Darren and everyone involved with that. I know we know quite a few people that helped them get there.
Completely agree. We're not going to tell Darren that we congratulated him. We don't want we don't want his head to get bigger than it already is. I will be guiding the ship along with Chris, who you just heard, our esteemed audio pilot, co-producer. You can find us all on the socials, me at Mitch Lawrence, Darren at Golf Getaways, and Chris at Chris McEwen. And of course, you should be catching up during this time on past episodes of Chris's great pod, Golf Origin Stories. He took a little summer hiatus, did some other stuff, but he's going to be, and I'm so glad about this, Chris, because it's so great. You're going to be ramping it back up soon again. So
sure am.
That's good
excited
news
for
all of us. Yeah, and we are.
Too. Yeah.
And also, of course, you have to subscribe to the fun and informative Driving Range Heroes with Chris and Bill Bush. Think about it, talking about building a media empire. I'm going to have call your secretary soon. I can feel it.
That's right.
All right. A great opportunity today, just completely, almost out of the blue, as we head into Ryder Cup week at the superb Golf Kohler destination that is the Straits Course at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. On a quick whim, a few days ago, I reached out to Mark the Caddy, one of the best followers you can find on Twitter, at Caddy Tales. That's T-A-L-E-S for those of you who are spelling impaired, Caddy Tales. He spends his days carrying bags and the games of visiting golfers on his broad shoulders at Whistling Straits. We are lucky that he's just gracious. That's what he is. He agreed to join Chris and me today, taking time out of a really well-deserved 2 weeks off. While the Cup is contested, we're going to talk about one of the world's great destinations, the Cup, his life as a caddy, and more. So it's with complete gratitude that we welcome Mark, and I'm going to call you this, I think, Mark the Caddy. Kind of like Megan the Stallion. I think you deserve some kind of pedestal approach.
Yeah. No, it's great to be here with you guys. Thanks for asking me. It's a fun opportunity, and I'm always happy to talk about life at a beautiful, amazing place like Whistling Straits.
Yeah, man. Those of us who do follow you and get to see the pictures you post and the great posts you put up from your vantage point, and it's a great window into that world. And as we'll talk about, Chris and I have yet to visit Whistling Straits, which is a source of deep, deep sorrow for the both of us. But things like your account really give us a window into it. So we're grateful to that. Before we get into the course itself and the Ryder Cup angles here, which is obviously on everybody's mind, I just wanted to start with your story. Tell us a bit how you came to Whistling Straits. You decided where you wanted to spend your days, how long you've been there. Just give us a little back Mark the Caddy history.
Sounds good. You know, I have been at Whistling Straits. This is my third season. So I moved here to Wisconsin back in the summer of or spring of 2019. My wife is actually from here and all of her family is here. And we were looking for a time to get back to this area. And she actually grew up a mile and a half around the corner from the Straits. And she grew up on a dairy farm. So Whistling Straits is out in beautiful rural farming community in Wisconsin. And it is not a place that you would expect to find what's going to be the mecca of golf over the next week. And so anyway, we were looking for an opportunity to move back. And I was looking for opportunities to just kind of make a life transition. And I just kept seeing ads. And we were home for in town visiting for Christmas, the Christmas before. And somebody said, you know, I hear they do great at, you know, caddies do really well at Whistling Straits. And I had never thought about being a caddy before. But one thing led to another. And we took the leap and decided to move here. And I started in May of 2019. And it's been quite a intense learning curve, certainly that first year. And then the second year was kind of a little bit odd because of COVID. And then this year has just been crazy, crazy busy for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the Ryder Cup coming. So really do not regret the decision. Love being here. And I'm really grateful for the chance that I have every day. I love having a job with no emails and no meetings. And you feel nice and physically tired at the end of the day. And if it goes well, great. If it happens to not go well that day, well, you had a 5-hour kind of contract with those people and you never have to be with them again. So it's kind of a great opportunity.
Can I ask what you did before?
So my background is in education, so various roles in education, and just kind of burned out and was ready for a change. And then it was a good time to move because of our kids. I have 4 kids, and based on their ages and the years they were going to be at in school and stuff, it was kind of like move then or don't move at all. So we took the leap.
How cool. How cool.
It's interesting that you have an educational background, because I feel like as a caddy, you're sort of teaching players about the course they're playing.
Sure.
And who are oftentimes like children.
And you must be patient as well. Very patient.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, especially on golf Twitter, focus on the actual physical playing of golf aspect of caddying, as one would rightly assume to be the case. But with the majority of groups, it's really a people management job, working well with others and exercising patience and communicating effectively. And quite frankly, the golf is often kind of secondary to being able to do all of that.
Okay, since I was going to get to it later, but I want to continue this discussion before we get to the Ryder Cup and the actual course. Because I find it fascinating. I know Chris and I and Darren, certainly, we've all had caddies. And I'm going to focus on the great ones we had. Occasionally, we've had some that weren't as good. We won't talk about that. but the connection between a player and a caddy, especially, I would think, I've played on courses where I had a caddy where it was more important just to kind of get some information and have somebody that would carry your bag, and we can experience the joy of just walking without carrying it. I love walking. I don't mind carrying. But at a place like Straits, that first year that you got there with no experience caddying, and at that course specifically, that must have been, I can't even imagine what that was like, given how iconic a course the Straits has become. and what most golfers would expect out of you when they say, okay, let's go. I mean, it must have been intense.
Yeah. And I have actually thought of that a number of times this year about how, because I'm so much more comfortable and now I can answer questions without even like thinking about it. For instance, you just, a lot of the same things come up over and over again. And I was just finding myself trying to recall what it was like that first year. And, you know, most people were gracious.
Did you tell them right off the bat, I'm new at this?
You know, most times people ask how long you've been there, and I would just say it's my first season, and you can see some reticence with them, but like, you know, and most times it was fine, but when you got a real intense player or a real great player, it could be tough. So I often leaned on the caddy I was working with, especially if I had an experienced one, humble mm-hmm. enough to kind of follow their lead. And, but I thought about that a number of times this year, how much worse at it I was 2 years ago, just because of inexperience. There's just things you learn, over walking the course so many times that I did not have the benefit of, especially those first few months. So,
right.
It's the job has certainly slowed down for me and gotten quite a bit easier.
So when you're going out, let's talk about this is a podcast about golf and travel. So clearly, we're connecting with golfers who do travel, who will go to a place like Whistling Straits, play the Straits, most of whom probably have never been there before. They've seen it. They know the challenges. They walk out of the clubhouse having never seen the course. And as Darren, I asked Darren what he thought about Straits when he first went there. And he literally said that when he walked out of the clubhouse and saw the reveal of the 18th and what he knew then was in front of him, it was one of the great experiences that he's had. He literally said that.
Yeah.
When you get players who are, and I would assume if it's based on the average of amateur golfers and their skill level, and we won't get into numbers, but let's just say that it's a majority who aren't great golfers. Is that the biggest challenge you face, is that they expect somehow that they're going to play better because they have you guiding them?
Yeah.
Or talk about the reactions that you have with golfers who come for the first time.
That's 100%. Actually, it's the number one thing I dislike about the groups and the job is the unrealistic expectations. You have a fair amount of guys who say they're not good at golf and they almost go overboard on apologizing before the loop starts. But the reality is the majority of our players are pretty type A successful people, and they come and a red flag is always when somebody says to me, they're going to go low that day. Because the odds are overwhelmingly against that happening. And so, managing their expectations is something that I try to do right off the get-go, even from the start of kind of what tees they want to play. Because 7,000 yards at Whistling Straits doesn't play the same as 7,000 yards at their local Florida country club, for instance.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Guys often don't seem to process that in advance. And so you're dealing most times with people who are the boss, who are in charge, who are very sure of themselves in most other settings in life, are very successful in most other settings in life. And now they're coming to a golf course that you know is got a good chance of humbling them. And or angering them. And so managing their expectations is a very important part of the job. And I had a guy this year, I met him, and it was already kind of a frustrating day because there was this big tournament out on the course. And so it was not a like tournament for good players. They paid to get in it, but they took themselves real seriously the way they were looking at putts and wouldn't give a putt or whatever. And so the first loop took 5 hours and 50 minutes, which is crazy. I had a super heavy bag. And then the end of the round, the guy didn't know he had to tip me. So it was just kind of a frustrating morning as it was. Well, then I had to turn around and my tee time for my next loop was literally 10 minutes after I finished my first one. So I'm like, this is going to be a miserable day. And it was a total cluster up at the bag drop and ended up meeting the players at the tee box. And already you're irritated because they had cart bags instead of carry bags. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die out here. And one of the players goes, all I can think about is 64, Mark. And I didn't even process it. I'm like, I look at him. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, I got to shoot 64 today to be in the money. And I'm like, well,
oh boy.
that would be like the course record. And he's like, well, they play from further back than us. And I'm like, this is good. I will pay you $100 not to caddy for you. And so it turns out that him and another guy shanked the ball off the first tee. We ended up looking for it way longer than you should look for a ball. They hit it into the junk and then we couldn't find it. And then their playing partner didn't let him take a lateral. He made him run back 200 some yards to re-tee. And the first hole took 35 minutes to play. All that's to say is, I mean, this guy, he says he's going to shoot a 64. He shot over 100. And the low man in the group had a 94. What made any of you think you were coming to Whistling Straits and going to have that kind of day? Well, then this guy who
did they tip you?
They did that day. Yeah, that group did, but not real well. But because guys like that never do. But the one player I couldn't help but feel like every shot he missed, he somehow was looking at me as though I was the problem, and I'm like. It was just a crazy thing. But the whole negativity of the round started with him having just completely asinine expectations. And so I see that a lot. And so there's certain red flags that I have, like whenever a guy greets you at the bag drop and says, you're going to read all the putts perfectly so that I make them all and I can win my match. You know, they'll say something like that. You're like, this is going to be a miserable loop. And because you have to go into a 18 holes at somewhere like the straight zone, you're going to miss a putt at some point. So anyway, that's a big deal. So you hit the nail right on the head.
How do you deal with, because I've played with people like this, obviously, with a caddy, I always marvel at your ability, knowing what's going on and what you're talking about, to be able to hold yourself in check. Because I'm from New York. If I were caddying, I probably wouldn't have a job that long because I'd get a few holes in and I'd be gone because I would tell them what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Are you just so able to kind of contain yourself for 5 hours, 50 minutes?
You
look at it as just, you know, this is my job and this is what I do and I'm going to get through it.
Yeah. So like there's a few ways that it ends up working itself out. Usually what happens is around the, it's always on the, in my experience, the fourth or fifth hole. One of those two. People blow it up and they realize, okay, I'm not shooting my low round today. And I would say the vast majority of guys kind of like come to a level of acceptance there. And maybe their attitude changes. And then they start just kind of like refocusing towards having some more drinks or whatever the case may be. So
how about having fun? Enjoying.
Yeah, right. Right.
Okay. Then, right. All right.
Right.
And then there's the other guys who start, you know, like really moping and getting angry. And most times you just don't say anything. Yeah, I mean, these are not the type of people that, like, if you saying something will not help. And so you just kind of quietly and move and do your job. And those guys are not the majority. That's the minority. But then there's the very minuscule number of players where you just kind of have to say either to them or someone in their group, like, we need to take this down a notch. And it's only happened a few times in 3 years. But the thing that I always, so I want to, I'm working on a book and kind of lessons I've learned through caddying. And probably the number one lesson that I want to talk about in this book is emotional intelligence and maturity. Because as I mentioned, like you got all these successful people with lots of money and you know, respect and whatever in their jobs and communities. And then golf is the great equalizer where they're, you know, they may be worse than a lot of people and, or they have a hard round and a lot of the guys handle it well. And a lot of the guys act like big babies. And so, you know, translating that kind of over to life, learning how to deal with disappointment or things not going our way. I have actually really grown significantly out of what I've observed because I get so annoyed by guys who just can't handle hitting a bad shot that I don't want to be anything like that.
Right. We're going to use this since you were an educator. We're going to school people here who are listening to this. We've already talked about emotional intelligence and high expectations. Assuming somebody walks up and is going to use you or any caddy. I just played the Ocean course and we had a great guy. There were a bunch of great caddies there. What's your other kind of advice about how the golfer should approach having a caddy and what they can do? They always look at the caddy and say, what can you do for me?
Right.
What can the golfer do for you?
What I would say is really helpful is for the player just to communicate, hey, this is what really helps me when I'm out on a round. And this is so for instance, if a player's like, hey, I am someone who really likes to get exact yardages or whatever, so that really helps me, then you know you're going to be right on top of that, you know. Right. So I have found, or like if a player says, you know, this is my weakness or this is my strength, you know, I would say most of the caddies that I work with at Whistling Straits, if they had that kind of information when a loop started, it would be invaluable in making the experience better because they're all good enough to be able to then cater to those needs. And just a quick communication at the bag drop. Say, hey, this is what I find helpful. This is what I don't find helpful. And that would be my number one suggestion.
Oh, cool. How do you look at, I know one area, because yardages are not that difficult to come by.
Right.
For you on a course like Straits where there's wind, elevation, that kind of thing, that has to be factored in, but you're in year three, so that's getting easier. Yeah. What about reading greens? I always find that the green reading aspect of what you do, again, because of expectations, I've had rounds with caddies all over the place, not a lot. But there have definitely been times where after the first three holes, let's say, I didn't trust the caddy's read anymore. How do you deal with, because you're going to make a call. If they ask you to read it, you're going to read it. What happens if either because of their mechanics or.
I would say that reading the greens is probably the number one thing that people look to. You know, that's the information that people value the most, I guess. And that they tend to differentiate, do they have a good caddy or a bad caddy? And so, you know, one of the things that I, you know, kind of emphasize with my players often is that, you know, the read changes based on pace, you know, because my experience is everyone is so dead focused on getting a right line. But it's really hard to figure out the pace on a course like the Straits that you're playing for the first time after you play like your home course 80 times a year. And, you can tell when a player isn't buying in or doesn't like it. That doesn't happen often. You can tell when a player is disappointed. And what I find is you just, on the ones you miss a little bit, you say, oh, I missed that. And that's cool. Occasionally you have to kind of let a player know he pushed it or pulled it. And, you know, the easiest way to do that is just right after they hit it up, pushed it, you know, that just kind of sends a, cause that happens so much more than they acknowledge, you know, and,
Sound like what I do to Darren when we,
but I, you know, I'd say most times we're reading the greens really well for our players and they acknowledge that, but there are some people, man, I just want to like scream and I'll have a player who's shooting around 100 or so. And so it was a very average to below average golfer. And they're playing a little Ryder Cup match and we're on hole 17 or 18 and they've got a 40 footer and they're like, Mark, I really need to make this. So give me your best read. It's like, I mean, you almost resent it because they like they're rating whether or not they're going to make that putt on the job that you do,
right?
You know, and it has nothing to do with the job you do when it's a situation like that. So
no,
it can be very frustrating.
Well, I laud you on so many fronts. I really do. Chris, you have any other questions from a golfer's perspective?
No, I mean, this is all really, I think like you talked about, you know, being up front with the caddy, like, hey, I could use this help or that help, is immensely helpful for, I think, a lot of us. I haven't played with a lot of caddies and I'm always like, I don't know, hesitant maybe to say those, you know, to point those kind of things out. So even just that, like, makes me feel better. So thank you for that.
The one of the caddies, the caddy we had at the Ocean Course, Mark, did a great thing that I hadn't really experienced before in all the rounds I've had caddies. Although, like I said, 90% of the caddies I've had have been fabulous and I've loved it. But this guy on the first tee, now I'm different because I play 100-year-old hickories.
Yeah.
So my club descriptions and whatever are different than anybody else's. But my wife and I played and there were two guys playing with us that we didn't know. And both of them were good. They were probably, I'm going to say both of them were about a five. And on the first tee, before they hit a shot, the caddy said to them, as we get started here and we move through different clubs, I'd like to know if I can, and it's easy, what you hit the yardages that you think you hit your clubs,
yeah.
Which I thought was amazing that he kind of took that attitude, which they liked. So if he wasn't going to say to them, it's a six,
yeah,
but he had some awareness of, would they rather be hitting a long iron or a hybrid, or
sure,
would they hit driver or three wood, or, and it started the round on such a good, you know, a good foot.
Yeah, no, that's a great, great move by him. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Before we're going to leave this now, I could talk about you, John, the caddy, forever. And before we went on, you said that you need this 2-week rest to let your body heal.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, again, if you're on a flat course in the middle of Iowa, not the same. When you're doing what you do on the straights and a lot of days double looping, it's a miracle to me at whatever age you are that you can get through it, especially with guys bringing cart bags, which
yeah. So brutal, you know, little side here to all, anyone who may be listening, you need to lighten your bags, folks. And yeah, I mean, you'll have the way that I now say it when I have a real heavy bag there, and we want guys to take stuff out of it, is I just say, helps me help you, because
right,
you know, then you can move quicker. Because some of the bags people brought this year were obnoxious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a difference between a little heavier bag versus just somebody who's like, you know, and then after your caddy tells you the bag is heavy, you don't need to put a water and a Gatorade in it right as you're leaving the starter's table.
Right,
okay, so
right.
I digress.
No, but that's good. Do they have carry bags at the straights?
In other words, so like that was a very rare thing where I had to carry a cart bag. If somebody comes with a cart bag, we require them to switch it out to one of our carry
good
bags.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel better for you now. So
yeah.
Mark, more do you wear any kind of step tracking?
I'm sorry?
Device? Do you wear any kind of step tracking device?
Yeah.
What's your yearly step total?
I don't know what my yearly step total is, but to give you an idea, like on the straights, a loop, my highest for a double loop was 45,000. And that, like a normal loop is going to be somewhere around 17,000. But, you know, you might get people playing the blue tees who are shanking it, you know, left and right all day. And, you know, you could get over 10 miles in a loop. And
good Lord.
My back just went out.
Yeah. I mean, like I've literally had a day where I've walked 20 miles out there with bags and stuff. And, you know, that's rare. Usually around 7 or 8 is probably 8 is kind of the average, but that's still a a good hike because it's not flat. So, yeah.
Here's a question. Do you look at Fluff? Do you look at Mike Cowan and go, this guy should be enshrined? There should be a mountain for Fluff? No. Given what he's doing at his age in his 70s?
Yeah, you know, it's, yeah, absolutely. A lot of people would look at me, though. I'm a big guy. And this season, unfortunately, I didn't take off the weight that I normally would during a season because I just found that I used caddying as an excuse to eat like a savage when I was and because I was so tired and stuff. So like some of the meals I had after caddying were just disgusting this season. And and always kind of on the go. And so, you know, I didn't take off quite as much weight. So I think I'm certainly have had players who look at me and go, how does this guy do this two loops a day? But, you know, your body gets conditioned to it. And, you know, but there are some days where you're on the last few holes of your second loop and you like question every life decision that brought you to this point. And you're just like, when a player, you know, is searching for a ball, you're just like, that they hit to a different hole, you're just like cursing them. But you know, but yeah, so a little aside to my first two seasons, double loops, probably between the 2 years combined, I did maybe 10 total double loops. This year, 35.
Oh my, holy,
that's just gives you an idea of how,
that's how busy you've been.
How busy, yeah, yeah,
wow.
Well, it makes total sense. People were cooped up for a long time. They wanted to get out, the Ryder Cup, all that stuff.
Yep.
Before we move on to the Ryder Cup and the actual straights course, I'm going to make you feel really good right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. When it turned out you were going to come on, I kind of put it out there on Twitter. And so I got this back, and this is going to make you feel good. And I'm pretty sure without meeting you in person, this represents the majority of people who feel the way that a guy named Gavin Blair from Iowa does. Does that name sound familiar?
I know Gavin, yeah.
He said he had you on the bag for a couple of days a year ago. He said you were absolutely great and helped him pull his head out of his ass on the sixth hole. Now I'm translating here because I'm from New York. Yeah. He said his you-know-what.
But
he said you pulled his head out of his ass on the sixth at the straights.
Well, you know what? I always try to find, you know, I actually remember that vividly. He was really him and his wife were great to spend a couple of days with. But you heard me mention earlier that people usually blow up around hole four or five, and he exactly did that, you know. And it was a little frustrating for me because he had requested to have me. He had found me through Twitter, and I'm like, the guy's shooting a horrible round. But once you get done with five, six and seven are a little easier. So I said, okay, we're going to turn this around. And so we get to the sixth hole, a relatively short par four, and the pin happened to be in a very advantageous place that day. So he hits a good drive, then he hits a second shot, and it goes over a hill, so you can't really see what it does on the green. Anyway, we get up there, and we're thinking the ball was perfectly hit. We're searching for like 2 minutes for the ball, and I'm like feeling so low and feeling just miserable, like this guy's having a terrible day. I'm the worst caddy ever. And all of a sudden, I walk by the hole, and I'm like, oh! Ball's in the hole. And no, you want to so he eagled it, and you're like, if you want to see a mood change immediately, have an experience like that. And you know, it was just really, you know, but he was like, you said it was gonna get better. You said, you know, that we were gonna turn it around. And I didn't mean like you were gonna eagle the hole, but that was a nice thing to have happen. So
how great.
Yeah.
How great. I see, this is what's great about this. Because when I first read that, his post, I went, uh-oh, okay, is this a story we're going to be able to tell here?
Yeah.
And then he put up a picture of himself and his wife.
Yeah.
And I said, I got back to him and I said, this is what the game is about. It's such a great picture of the two of them on that green. And now that you tell the story, it's even better.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yep. No, they had a great time. Man. His wife was super cool. And she was not like a serious golfer. She could make her way around the course. But she was there because she was being like a cool wife. And they were having a good time together. And you wish more of that happened. You really do. Like, because it's a fun time when it does.
Well, hopefully people listening to this will take all this into account. the next time they come to the Straits or wherever they play. If they play a nine holer near them, it should be the same attitude. Let's get to the Straits. Let's get to the Ryder Cup. We'll go through some stuff fairly quickly. There's so much to talk about, and there's obviously so much already being written and said, and people are used to that. What I was interested in was somebody who's there every day, who knows the course as intimately as you do, relative to the guys that are coming to play it, and what some of the things we can be a little more aware of based on your expertise. Before we do, I want to, you mentioned something when I asked you about your coming there at first, and you mentioned that it's farmland.
Yeah.
And I was just reading about it, and I've never been there, so I hadn't really done a lot of research on the Straits. I've talked about it with people, but I hadn't realized that it makes total sense that before Pete Dye got his brain and his dozers on it, it was a flat piece of ground. It was farmland on the shores of Lake Michigan. And Chris and I just got back a couple of months ago from the Dye course at French Lick, and it was a similar experience in terms of what he did with the land. It used to be an army base.
Yeah.
In the 50s, they used to have about 600 soldiers there doing anti-aircraft training. And they brought in 7,000 truckloads of dirt.
Yeah.
Chew on that for a while, people. 7,000 truckloads of dirt to give us the course that we see today. So what it is now, this stunning, spectacular, you know, postcard of a golf course that you walk every day. First off, I guess, have you had a chance to, the players have been there for a week now. Have you had a chance to interact with any of them?
No,
they're already gone.
Unfortunately, that's not one of the perks of the job. They keep us away from them. But a couple of guys on Sunday actually waited around, and there was three guys picked who would have gone out with some of the pros if they would have taken caddies, but they didn't while they were practicing. So no, I haven't interacted with them.
So it's an interesting point. They're going to have their own caddy.
Right.
Right. So this is like the early days of the Masters, for example, when the local caddies were the guys who carried for pros coming in. Then it changed. Now Augusta's different because they play it every year. But it's interesting to me that they wouldn't want some kind of, I mean, their guys are coming in cold unless they've played the course a bunch of times.
Yeah. Yeah. My guess is, I mean, I don't know. My guess is that they're probably like they're interacting with like our pros or whatever. And, you know, they know the course well too, but it would just be a cool opportunity for the caddies. Even like, I guess a bunch of them practiced on Sunday and Monday. If they would have even just let us kind of walk around while they were doing that, you know, and, but I'm sure they don't want caddies out. Some of the caddies may not behave and, you know,
Like the old days, like the old days in Scotland.
So I don't know, but, that would have been really a neat experience. But my guess is they're interacting with the pros some and, getting knowledge that way. You know,
well, here's an idea, though. We want an advantage. We meaning being the Americans.
Yeah.
I love the whole thing. So, but they talk about Stricker setting up the course.
Yeah.
They widened some of the fairways to give us bombers a little more chance. What a great opportunity if before you could go out, you guys, the good ones.
Yeah.
You know, keep the partiers in.
Yeah, yeah.
But let people who are there every day just walk.
Yeah.
And if asked, you know, if I were a caddy, if I were caddying for pick a player, I would certainly turn and say, what's the tendency here?
Yeah.
How does this green really work?
Yeah.
What have you experienced with the wind? What, to me, that's talk about getting an advantage over the European players.
Yeah, absolutely. And a few holes like where they did widen them or create kind of like a bailout area, you know, whatever. It'd be interesting to kind of go over what's the best way to approach that hole, you know, driver or three wood or whatever. So, that would have been a really great opportunity, but that was not afforded to us. So instead, I'll just look forward to next week being a spectator.
All right, so let's talk about the course and the actual Ryder Cup competition.
Yeah.
As an expert, which you are, Mark the caddy, what are your expectations of how this might go? Nobody can predict it,
yeah.
But the course is such a demanding test. We've seen it in major championships. You know, we've watched it already. We've seen issues with bunkers. Dustin Johnson probably, well, he's Dustin, so he doesn't.
Yeah.
But if it were me, he'd have a nightmare about 2010.
Yeah.
What he thought was a waste bunker that wasn't. Talk about the key kind of points that you think are going to play a pretty pivotal part.
Well, I think, you know, you mentioned something earlier that I think is probably the number one issue is weather. To be honest, I think the course is, for those guys, probably a lot of birdies if we don't have heavy wind. You know, they're just that good and they can hit so far that, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunities out there for them, especially if they set up the holes in certain ways with where the pin positions are. So, you know, I don't want to have it be like bad weather all the days because I'm going to go out there, but I, you know, one day where the wind is blowing real like 25, 30 miles an hour, I think dramatically will change how the course plays for them. There's a couple of holes where they put the flag will dramatically change it, primarily hole 6 and hole 12. They're kind of very unique greens. And if they put like these, and I heard that Stricker actually doesn't have a say in where like the pins are going to be. PGA right. and Ryder Cup Europe's doing that. Those holes could play very easy, or there's, you know, ridiculous. And there's kind of no in between based on where they put the flag. The hard part for like, and I, you know, it's hard to translate to how it is for the pros, but for like, what I would say is, let's say we get a really good golfer out on the course and, you know, does really well at their club and is a good handicap and stuff. What is always the thing that can blow up around for them is just some of the lies that you can get on the hills or, like you said, in the bunkers. You know, you might hit a drive a few yards offline and it bounces into this bunker and it's under this ridge and you can't do anything but just pop it out a few yards. Mm-hmm. You know, and I can see that being a little bit of a negative for the Americans if they can't keep the ball safe and in play. And, you know, a lot of the caddies have kind of talked when we've just been chit-chatting about it that we worry that somebody like Bryson DeChambeau, that the course just really doesn't favor somebody like him because yep. it's just very easy to get into some trouble that can cause you to blow up a hole. And there's going to be a number of holes, though, where I think the Americans aren't going to be able to lay off. Hole number 1, maybe hole number 6, where the flag is, hole number 10 and 14, which are all par 4s. Certainly some guys are going to try to drive the green. And if they're able to do that, then obviously there's some real scoring opportunities out there for them.
What about the talk about the par threes at the Straits? Because again, I'll go back to what Darren said, and I've seen, and most of us have seen pictures of the par threes. Darren said it's probably in all the courses he played the greatest collection.
Oh yeah,
of par threes in terms of challenge and fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
That he's played, or the par threes seem to be someplace where there's going to be a lot of, you know, motion back and forth.
That's right.
Because of where they all sit.
Yeah, they're all on the water.
Right.
And hole 3 has this ridiculous green where, you know, where they place the flag, it might be impossible to stop the ball if it goes past the hole and it'll just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. So that there's that. Hole 7 was the one that I think John Daly made famous by throwing his club in the water. That's probably, my guess, will be the one that plays easiest for them. Hole 12 is the shortest. Like some days we're playing that hole 12, and it's a 70 or 80 yard hole for people playing like the green tees.
Right.
But there's like where I'm sure they're going to put the flag one day is in the back right corner of the green. And it's like landing on a little postage stamp with no margin for error. And right to the right of the green, it rolls down into the water. I mean, that is going to be fun to watch. That one is where you're like, I wouldn't mind seeing the guys trying to, you know, stick the ball there. And then hole 17 is a lot of caddies' favorite hole on the course. Just a very long par three. And if you've got
that
the
one, that one can play 235 if they want to, right?
Actually, more. The black tees are at 249. And if you have a wind blowing into your face, it's crazy. Yeah. And we joke there on that hole, like, you know, that they've got all of Wisconsin to their right. And if you go left down the hill, like the caddies and caddies aren't licensed to work in Michigan there. So, you know, we don't want to go down there with them. But
but that's just a little cut driver for McCune.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, that hole's like, that can be just such a total beast, you know? And so, yeah, they're all beautiful. And if I am correct, I think, I know on 17, they put up bleachers. So that'll be a fun one to watch. And I know on 12, they put up some bleachers as well, because they're such fun holes to watch.
You know, there's some courses that these competitions are played where a lot of the matches don't get to 17, 18. And so some matches we may not see get to those holes. But luckily for us, the last five at the Straits, the last five holes at the Straits are pretty stinking good from what I can tell.
Yeah, and especially if you have a wind into your face. Mm-hmm. 14, they did an elevated, they built a new elevated tee box for these guys. And so that's one of the holes I mentioned that the big hitters may try to go and drive the green. And then 15 is a really long par four, really long par four. 16 is an uphill long par five, right along the water. And then 17, and then 18, I just, from where the pros will play that hole, I just personally can't envision a harder golf hole and more amazing golf hole. It's, I mean, we marvel at, in 3 years, I've caddied there 3 years. I've seen now thousands of bags carried between the two I'm carrying, the other caddies carrying too, all those loops. And in 3 years, I've seen a total of three birdies on that hole.
Wow.
And most caddies see one or two a year at most.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, they haven't seen Chris and I play.
Yeah.
So that's out
the window. Well,
this is, I feel like, again, we could spend a whole lot of time talking to you about all of this. It's fascinating to me. What about before we let you go? Cause I know you've got some school pickup. You're a good dad.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure we get you out of here on time, but, there's obviously other courses, the Irish.
Yeah.
There's Black Wolf Run close by. Give us just a couple of thoughts on the other courses.
Yeah. The Irish course,
Destination Kohler.
The Irish course is my favorite to play. You know, a lot of people ask us about playing the Straits. We actually don't really play the Straits, the caddies, because it's like, who wants to walk it after you've caddied and it's harder to get on for us. The Irish is much more accessible to us and, you know, similar, to the Straits in many regards, except for the, you know, not being on the water. But a little wider fairways, but beautiful. The condition it was in this year is just so amazing. Over at Black Wolf Run, really the river is probably our second most popular course. And some many would say it's actually the hardest of our four courses. With the difference being like, you know, over at like the Irish and Whistling Straits, if you hit the ball out, you might not be in a good spot, but there's a chance we're going to find it, or a strong chance we're going to find the ball. Over at the river, everybody loses more balls. A ball's gone if you don't keep it in play. And then Meadow Valley is, you know, it's the fourth rated of our four courses. But, you know, if you just showed up and played that and didn't know any of the context, you'd say, man, I played an amazing golf course today. And that's probably the easiest one of the four. But still, they did some work on the back nine a couple of years ago, and it's just gorgeous. So
what a treat.
It's an amazing place to come for a trip. I'll throw one little thing in there though. And I had a player say this year, and it stuck with me. He shot a 73 with me. So he was definitely a very good player. One of the players who's been all to every course and in Scotland and Ireland and all the destination courses in America. And he said to me one thing that he's played the Straits a number of times. He said one mistake that he thinks a lot of players make is they go to resort courses for golf trips. And he even threw in like Bandon Dunes in that category. Sand Valley in Wisconsin, he threw in that category. And he said, and then they come to Kohler and they book these four courses and they're going on their buddy's trip. And so they've got their mindset that they're going to a resort vacation. And he's like, guys need to know Whistling Straits is not a resort course. And that goes back to having the right expectations. Cause what happens is guys start getting beat up by the course and they start getting all down and frustrated. And I thought that was a great point he made is, you know, guys are always booking these golf vacations, but they got to know that not all of them are created equally. And he put Straits kind of at this level of difficulty that you need to be mindful of.
That's great advice. Fabulous advice. All right, Chris, we're going to let Mark the caddy go. Anything, any final thoughts?
Mark, with all of your sort of, you know, local sort of tribal knowledge of the course, are you going to be dropping some tidbits on Twitter during the weekend?
I plan on being very active on Twitter over the course of the next awesome. Week. So yes, at Caddy Tales, anybody out there, but I plan on being very active on Twitter, having a good time with it. I mean, I just created that Twitter account on a whim one night last year and started throwing up silly stuff. And it's kind of proven to be a fun little diversion that I hope someday I can learn how to monetize, but I'm not quite there yet.
So. Well, here's one thing that you're doing for all of us. You're doing a Ryder Cup giveaway, I've noticed. And you could, it looks great. It's fabulous stuff. Are you going to do that all through next
week? Yeah. So I won some things. We had a raffle for the caddies. They kind of gave us some stuff because of working hard this year and everything. And so I'm basically re-gifting, but, and there's a couple of things that I'll buy on my own to send out, but yes, I plan on having a few more giveaways over the course of the next week. So stay tuned for that as well.
Okay, cool. Well, again, I can't thank you enough for hopping on. This has been fantastic fun. And I just, as I said, I'm always in awe when you get somebody like you who has chosen something purposefully for all the right reasons in life and get obvious passion and joy along with the ups and downs of it and have such a great attitude. I think it's fantastic. So
no,
bravo
really,
to
thank
you.
And I enjoyed talking to you guys. It's a lot of fun for me too. And so thanks for the opportunity and I'll be tuning into both of you guys in the future.
Okay, great. Chris, thanks, man. Always, always great. I have a feeling that you and I are making secret notes and plans right now to get up to Kohler.
Yes.
All right. Good. You're a little closer than I am. I may have to leave a bit earlier to get there. But again, Mark the caddy, at Caddy Tales on Twitter. As always, we have to thank you for listening as well. Couldn't do it without you. Follow us on the social media at Golf Trip Experts. Lots of great content about golf and travel. Don't forget to check out Golf Origin Stories, Chris's show, That Range Life, because clearly Chris isn't busy enough and we got to keep him out of trouble somehow. I don't know. Herb Kohler had a dream. Mark has a dream of great rounds with great people guiding us all around the place he loves. Chris and I dream of getting to play Whistling Straits with Mark the caddy. Hope you have a dream too. Go chase it. So long.